To me, a DAO is simply an internet community with an unseizable bank account. So if you can kind of like check those two boxes, or three boxes, depending on how you want to parse that sentence, that's, to me, that's table stakes for a DAO.
Hey everyone, I once again have the wonderful pleasure of speaking with the one and only Mark Risen Hopkins. How's it going, man?
Hey, going pretty good. How about you?
It's going pretty well. I'm finally filling out my backdrop a little bit. Got the Vegemite squeezy bottle from, you know, over there. Right. Just you know, it's always a controversial lightning rod of topic of debate, but yeah, so the reason I wanted to talk to you again, right? I mean, the first time it was about your case, the second time just new show thing. But I've been sort of on this, as I'm sure we all are, this explorations learning path of what makes the best thing, what drives this, the crypto space forward, what actually works out the best. And so obviously there's a lot of theoretical ideas. I had a lot of theoretical ideas about Bitcoin. Then the block size war came, and then some of my ideas, I guess, were disproven. I thought that Bitcoin's governance system itself was sufficient. I got the impression that most of the Bitcoin community would support a reasonable block size increase, whereas that was not what ended up happening due to other factors. And so then I kind of got it full into like DAO or GTFO, right? You have to have explicit on-chain governance telling you what does the network want and what does it not want. And so I dove headfirst into Dash in 2016 and, you know, up until I guess now. In that time frame, I've kind of hit the perspective that that's not necessarily enough, that there's still something missing, because otherwise every single top cryptocurrency today would be, again, this is my more recent thought. I'm not sure if it's like a hard, fast opinion, but it's just, if the DAO space, as it were today, were sufficient and sufficiently superior to such an extent, I think you'd have all the top crypto projects be DAOs by now. And that hasn't happened. And so now I'm not saying I was wrong, but I was missing something, and I'm looking for that thing I'm missing. So with that grand intro, I guess, why don't you tell me about your involvement in the DAO space?
Great. Yeah. So, I mean, I also primarily like an educator and a researcher and just early crypto participant. So my involvement in the DAO space, for most of its life, I guess I should say, has been as an observer or someone who chronicles stuff. And so like I actually remember reading the Daniel Larimer post when it was brand new, and, you know, all the other things that kind of occurred where you could say these are where the seeds were planted for DAOs. But more from a practical perspective, my involvement with DAOs has primarily been in the social impact DAO space. I worked with Free Ross DAO as the kind of basically the operations guy. I wrote or had a hand in writing the majority of their governance. I worked with Ukraine DAO, continue to work with Ukraine DAO as a operator person in their dev group, which is also a social impact DAO, but a vastly, like from a governance perspective, vastly different from what Free Ross DAO or what most other DAOs look like. And then I've advised and helped devise unique governance patterns for, I would say, a handful of other smaller DAOs that very few people have ever heard of. You know, varying degrees of it still working for them type stuff. So I feel like I've got, I spent a lot of my time when I was in Beaumont, researching DAO stuff. I would have my friends at Free Ross DAO print out stuff and mail it to me so I could have, you know, study materials for the class I was teaching and, you know, just stuff for me to read to keep up on what's going on in the world and stuff. So that was a fun time to be able to just totally indulge my academic side and really understand, you know, kind of the different corners of what was going on in the space and what was working and what wasn't working. One of the things that I got real into and as a concept during that time was the Nouns DAO concept. Mm-hmm. I helped devise a few noun-ish type DAOs since then. They've been in the news a lot this week as well because of the second fork that they're experiencing now. A lot of people are saying that this is a example of why DAOs don't work or can't work, but I don't know. I've got opinions on that as well. But yeah, that's kind of a little bit of a background, a smattering of where my DAO influences and knowledge come from.
Yeah, that makes sense. And most of my hands-on experience comes from mostly the Dash DAO. I have worked a little bit in the Zec Hub DAO, which is an offshoot of the Zcash ecosystem, and obviously been baseline familiar with a bunch of the ETH DAOs, or the basic concept of you buy a bunch of tokens and then the tokens let you vote on what happens to the money used to buy the tokens. And so structurally, at its very basic level, now well, starting with the Dash example is probably, you know, is the oldest DAOs, the Model T Ford of the DAOs, I guess, like the old rickety one that's still around, but it's like, you know, it's old. Every month, 10% of the, well, it's actually got voted to increase to a 20% in the next, you know, few months, but 10% of the block reward, the coin emissions, not the fees, just the emissions to come in every month, are reserved for a super block. And master nodes, you know, incentivized nodes who get to vote on this, vote on proposals that anyone can submit to the network for where that money goes. And that's basically all of it. So you submit a proposal with a anti-spam fee that says, I want money to this address, and this is the title. And any other discussion, everything else is all like offline, or it's all external. It's off-chain, off-platform. And then based on whoever has the most nodes signaling a yes vote at the end of a voting cycle, it automatically gets paid out to those addresses, or if it's not, or it doesn't get created if there's not enough proposals that get funded. And so that's at that basic kind of level. But then beyond that, and I guess it'd be a similar level if you know, everyone bought tokens and then you did it that way. But the basic vote for a yes or no question type thing or a payout it's pretty, you know, rudimentary. That's the baseline of a DAO, I guess. But what right. other stuff is included in a DAO today, or modern DAOs, right? That's an old DAO. What do modern DAOs have in the actual structure, and not just like maybe a written agreement or a constitution that is, it's just kind of like out there, but like people don't have to follow it if they don't want to, protocol level, right? What else is there out there that are for DAO tooling or DAO elements these days?
So I would say, like the easiest way to succinctly express kind of what you said is the baseline that you saw, like kind of you witnessed in the Dash DAO, mm-hmm. and is common to current DAO incarnations. This is kind of, I don't know who said this to me first. It was in a group text or a phone call or something, or Discord chat or something, but. To me, a DAO is simply an internet community with an unseizable bank account. Mm. So if you can kind of like check those two boxes or three boxes, depending on how you want to parse that sentence, that's to me that's table stakes for a DAO, right? There is a community around it. There is an unseizable bank account. And then implied in that is some sort of method for that community to decide how that bank account is governed. I think if you go further back, especially talk about the Larimer concept, or if you look at how, because Vitalik Buterin was the first guy to say the word DAO in any context. Mm-hmm. And he's talked about what his inspirations for the idea were from the Daniel Suarez mm-hmm. novel called Demon. And so in that situation, a DAO or what the inspiration for the concept of DAOs was simply an unseizable bank account that was governed by a bot, right? Mm-hmm. Or some sort of AI character. So the common architectures that you see today really kind of fall under, I would say, 3.5 different type of architectures. The first category being simple M of N wallets, mm-hmm. right? That whenever the number of stakeholders or community members grow past what is feasible to govern via simple M of N polling, they will graduate to something like snapshot voting. So mm-hmm. snapshot.org, where they essentially are like, it's like any type of nonprofit or high school club that you were involved in, you know, Lions Club, you know, Rotary Club. They've got some rules written down on how they're going to govern themselves, and nothing but the polling itself is governed on chain, right? Mm. Which allows for the pseudonymous nature of DAOs to kind of be represented there. But it still requires significant human involvement and implementation. So the one thing that's kind of like an asterisk on that category is the fact that Gnosis Safe, which is the M of N wallet that most people in the Ethereum ecosystem use, has a thing called the Zodiac Suite, which is a great set of tooling that starts to bridge the gap, because there is a point in which you may grow from an M of N into snapshot voting. There's like a middle ground in where you've got a certain number of users or a certain amount in the treasury where it becomes a huge liability to rely on loose non-blockchain enforced governance. Mm. In my opinion, that should only ever be a halfway house on the way to something more strict and on-chain.
Yeah,
I've seen DAOs that have lingered too long in the snapshot voting realm that end up getting rugged or attempted rugs or conflicts or dissolution of the DAO because there isn't clearly defined rules that are enforced on chain. And I've been involved in some of those battles as well. Like I had to fight those battles hand to hand, not just in a theoretical concept or in a, like I've seen it happen type concept. So the second category, I would say, is anything that follows the pattern of the DAO, which was that kind of archetypical DAO that was created on Ethereum, the first major DAO on the Ethereum network. The reason why they tend to follow that form very closely is because some of the most popular no-code DAO tooling that exists is something called Moloch DAO.
Mm-hmm.
And Moloch DAO is the right architecture for the majority of DAOs, in my opinion, although it is certainly not perfect. Essentially, the way it works, but it is good if you're coming out of this like M of N snapshot, converting yourself over to kind of a more formalized DAO for a larger community or larger treasury. You've got two classes of tokens in a Moloch DAO. You've got the loot tokens, treasury tokens, and then you've got the governance tokens. And there's a bunch of switches that you can flip on both of those tokens. You can make them soulbound or you can make them tradable in both cases. And the key difference that you can't change between both of those classes of tokens is that only people who have the governance tokens can vote on proposals and can vote on proposals. You can mm-hmm. have it where are required to own them to submit, or you can have it open and you can adjust that fee that you were talking about in Dash, the mm-hmm. the anti or whatever. The loot tokens are not without recourse, though. Mm-hmm. The loot tokens, what ownership of a loot token designates is ownership, a proportional ownership or pro rata ownership of whatever's in the DAO treasury. Mm-hmm. If the folks with the governance tokens ratify a proposal that alienates too large a percentage of the loot token holders, there is a rage quit mode, which mm-hmm. prevents rugs and other things, because and then there's usually a configurable threshold in a Moloch DAO of if enough people rage quit, it will revert the proposal, the ratified proposal to the pre-proposal state. And there's like usually like kind of a grace period for that to happen. But if that threshold isn't met, after the grace period is over, people who have rage quit get a pro rata portion of what's in the treasury, and their tokens are, you know, basically sent back, you know, basically taken out of circulation. Burned. Right.
Yeah.
So the third category, and it's, I would say the most nascent one, is the one I mentioned earlier, the Nouns DAO category. Mm-hmm. It is distinct enough to deserve its own category because it is, it's not the only DAO architecture that uses NFTs for governance, but it is a very specific form. The way it tends to work, and there's a lot of little caveats and details on how these votes will work, but essentially it is a recurring auction, you know, of generative art NFTs. Mm-hmm. You find how that generative art looks, and then it's a one that happens either every 15 minutes or every minute or every hour, every day, once a week, once a month, whatever that number is. All proceeds from that auction go into the treasury. The owner of that NFT now has pro rata governance voice as well as ownership of the treasury. Hmm. So they don't have that two token system that Moloch DAOs have, which might be but considered by some to be a step backward in terms of governance, but it is unique and it is interesting in terms of creating a self-replenishing fund for whatever it is that you're trying to do. It's not the right solution for everything, but it is a solution for a lot of things.
Yeah, interesting. It's so, as far as, like, that's just like the basic distribution mechanism. And as you mentioned, like the community with a bank account kind of thing, with an uncensorable bank account, it seems like the DAO, there's two different things that are involved in, I guess, the modern concept of the DAO in the crypto sense, which is decision making and funding. And sometimes those things kind of get conflated a little bit. And so for the purpose of Bitcoin, for example, I would argue that Bitcoin sort of lacked both of those in a very formalized way. Not a really good decision-making structure. Of course, people said the miners can signal and all this kind of stuff, but miners in the end turned out to be more, I guess, mercenaries or passive actors than active in governance. And then the other thing is funding, which I guess lack of protocol-level funding in Bitcoin and in Ethereum, one could argue too, kind of led to dev team capture by outside interests, or, you know, et cetera. And so it's from my experience with other DAOs such as Dash, it seems like the governance system, which is actually was not designed to just make yes or no kind of decisions, is kind of a blunt instrument for that, seems to have not really had many issues. It seems to have just done its job. It's just that in the distribution of the funds part seems to be where a lot of weird outcomes have kind of come out of. What's your experience on the whole in those two things? Do you think that, have you seen more of DAOs failing to actually make the decisions properly like they were meant to do? Or do you see the actual fund distribution mechanism being, you know, maybe not having the best outcomes or What do you see either of those things happening frequently, or do you see one more than the other? What's kind of your perspective?
So I tend to be a lot more forgiving than most on the concept of DAOs. Mm-hmm. And that partially stems from my politics and partially stems from my how I define a DAO in my head. And like I said, it's mm-hmm. a community with an unseen account. People lay at the feet of the concept of DAOs all the failures that we see in DAOs, either with rugs or with governance failures or whatever. But you have to imagine, you have to also take into account the fact that you don't lay at the feet of the idea of a corporation every single corporation's failure, right? Mm-hmm. Like if IBM fails, the plumber that services my, you know, my office down the road is not like, we don't say, well, the idea of a corporation has failed them both, right?
Yeah, of course.
Every corporation, every organization is unique. And that's not, there's no difference between that and a digital autonomous organization as a concept. That's the, where I start my analysis in answering your question, is to say that every DAO is unique. And you can take the concept of a Moloch DAO and implement it poorly or implement it well. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily the fault of the Moloch DAO. Occasionally it is. Like mm-hmm. when we saw what happened with the DAO, like the proto Moloch DAO, mm-hmm. like that was hard-coded to fail. I mean, there was a definite misalignment of incentives. When we saw the block wars, this is where we can start. We compare block wars to like modern on-chain DAOs. This is where we can start to see the, and especially since so much time has elapsed, and we have so many mm-hmm. examples of success and failure, we can start to make judgment calls between archetypes. I would say Dash and Litecoin and Bitcoin and like all the other, non-Turing complete or semi-Turing complete mm-hmm. blockchain that function as decentralized organizations were created under a similar ideology, rooted in cypherpunk, rooted in crypto-anarchism, which is to say, we're not going to give you explicit rules. We're going to engineer a system with different stakeholders, and hopefully we have conceptualized enough edge cases for the different stakeholders that their competing interests will end up being positive for the ecosystem as a whole. Mm-hmm. And the good news and the bad news is that, I mean, while you and I may have disagreements about how well Bitcoin has been served by that, there's no denying that loose framework has at least allowed the network to survive and thrive. Maybe yeah. not thrive at the level that we think it should, or mm-hmm. maybe missed opportunities. But that is not necessarily. I'm sorry. There was a note on the screen. Not necessarily. Like I would say, I wouldn't call Bitcoin a failure by any stretch. Mm-hmm. Although there yeah. have been failures.
I think there have been
of modern DAO architecture than there have been more instances of failure that you can attribute to the architecture in modern tooling than you can attribute to this loose association of incentives. Because what happens is when you get too specific with what the rules are, it's just like the U.S. government or any other modern government. Like the government of 200 years ago, and then like all the cruft that has been attached to those early rules doesn't necessarily serve us very well in the modern era, right?
Yeah,
like
sure.
There was no way that people in 1776 could account for Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I noticed that you mentioned about success, it's kind of funny because when you talk to, say, people like Bitcoin maximalists, which I don't try to, but it happens, you get a lot of a completely different perspective. They seem to think, for example, the modern state of Bitcoin is that of resounding success. And I don't really think that they're wrong. It's a different kind of success. What you mentioned with the loose system seems to be, I guess, the most free market style system seems to really get a lot of opportunity for people to build things and thrive and go. And so growth, it's a very pro-growth basic format. But it just seems like there's some problems at the top where I would think that Bitcoin and Ethereum have both been sort of kneecapped in their potential because of top-down decisions, while all the bottom stuff has flourished incredibly in the confines of the kneecapping, right? As far as like what they've been like, as far as how far Bitcoin was able to be structurally pushed, I think it's flourished fantastically. Now, it seems like there might be a problem when you fix the problem, but get rid of the good parts, where sometimes, okay, you allow the top structure to not be as kneecappable, but then you get rid of all the flourishing that happens underneath, or at least you disincentivize or you do things that cause that to happen.
I mean, noted Bitcoin maximalist Jimmy Song actually spoke to this exact point. I don't know when he gave the interview. I quoted it 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, towards the beginning of the pandemic. And he was talking about, because colored coins is functionally identical to this modern concept of ordinals. There's zero difference. He saw the rise of the ERC-20 standard being the what powers DAOs and other functionality as the key disconnect was the cost to implement, number one. Number two, this thing that you're talking about is having more functionality able to be played with at the bottom in the ecosystem part rather than being dictated to from the top. He was the coder that came up with color coins, arguably, you know, the ideological godfather of this new movement of ordinals, and that's what he's saying. And he never says anything nice about Ethereum, and he said that. He said, like, this is better architecture for that. You know, this whole tokenization can really only happen in the Ethereum ecosystem because of factors that are, you know, architectural to Bitcoin. Like, you can't change that without breaking some other things that we think Bitcoin is for. Yeah. So, that says a lot. And I think the other thing that's interesting to me, and I was going back to one of the first things that you said in the top of the show, is what solves these things, what solves some of the problems that Dash is seeing, what solves some of the problems that, you know, NounsDAO is currently seeing. And I think the solution to these things is another bull market. Because nouns, DAOs, and startup markets are only come out of bull markets, really. Like, you don't see the economic shitposting in a bear market. You see people hunkering down and building stuff, but you're not going to see the problems that you're trying to prevent from occurring. You're not going to be able to test those problems unless there's lots of money being thrown around and a lot of bad actors trying to test your governance, right?
Yeah.
So, like, all the problems that DAOs are designed to solve are basically people that are trusted actors, because they're basically with a DAO is you're trying to mitigate the exploitation of trust that occurs inside of a community, right? Mm-hmm. There's implied trust inside of a digital community that you can't mitigate in the way you can in a physical community. Mm-hmm. And so whenever it's like 5 people or 20 people, there are certain ways to mitigate that exploitation of trust that are, it's better if you're nimble and loosely enforced rules and just more focused on your nimbleness as a community. But once you grow past a certain amount of money or past a certain size, those rules no longer work, right? And that number doesn't have to be that big for you to get a lot of crazy where these people come from, bad actors inside your community. With Free Rostow, during some of the worst attacks on the treasury, we only had maybe $1 million in the treasury, $1.5 million. Not a lot for the, as far as most DAOs go. So the, and then towards the end of, like, there was a rug attempt when there was only like 600,000-700,000 in the treasury, from people with a lot of reputation to lose. So, and you know, it was, like I said, you have to have a lot of attempts and a lot of data and a lot of like, okay, now we've seen a lot of rug attempts and governance attacks and these sorts of things to understand what you didn't conceptualize. And this is one of the things why I think Bitcoin shouldn't change their governance. And a lot of those projects from that era shouldn't change their governance, because if it's worked this long, at least in keeping it alive, let's not test in production, right? Let's let Ethereum and all these like smaller DAOs that are screwing around with smaller projects figure out all the ways to do it wrong before you bring it into something that's, you know, is pivotal to the community's existence.
Yeah. It's so what I would kind of consider being the devil you let in accidentally with the DAO, or the possibility for it, is the misalignment of incentives that maybe were better aligned than we thought in the past. And so I think a lot of people really underestimate the elegance of Bitcoin's design of the incentives of, first of all, the people who run the network and its security. Anyone could participate and they get paid by the network in the network token. But then obviously they have the incentive to that circulates the capital of the network. So you have an incentive to provide exchange, get exchanges going or whatever. And then they make money from the project because et cetera, et cetera. And there's just so many incentives all the way down. And of course the average Bitcoin holder, the only way they get more money is by making Bitcoin go up. And then that's why they post nonstop on Twitter about how it's going to 3 million for sure next cycle or whatever.
You're running the marketing for Bitcoin is exactly what you want. It's a, it's a great, you know, zero budget marketing department.
Yeah. And so all that stuff works out super well in a lot of ways. Now, one thing I found out with the DAO specifically is when you have a collective, I guess, socialized form of distribution of funds, things get a little trickier in terms of the efficiency standard. And so, for example, I remember during in the 2016 era when Dash had a teeny DAO, it was like 80% of it went to the core developers, which is just like a few grand a month. It was like very little. And that just worked on the core protocol. And, you know, they put in budget proposals. Someone could vote against them, but just, wow, these are our guys. We'll vote for them. 20% went to just random people being like, I want to buy pizza for a meetup, that kind of stuff. But then you had the giant 2017 price run up where went from like, you know, 5 to 10 USD to up to 1600 per token by the end of the year. And I remember in December of 2017, the Dash treasury was worth 10 million a month. So that's actually pretty good. Like, by even modern comparisons, that's a lot of money. And at that point, I, despite having all this money to throw around, sustainable growth and adoption over this next several years didn't really catch on. And what I would kind of liken that to is a government, which makes it, you know, all the libertarians in the world get all, you know, upset about that. You know, it's not the same because it's voluntary. And this, yes, that's true. However, it's still people voting. It's it has the, I guess, the socialist calculation problem, as it were, and it's got the voting blind kind of a thing where, you know, you say like, oh, this guy says he's going to fly a jet plane around and have Dash branding all over the place and all this kind of stuff. It'll be great for marketing. And people are like, sure. And then they spend it on it and they have no idea if it was a good deal or not. And there you go. And so I guess The difference is if you're in the purely Bitcoin space, you want to start something like Swan Bitcoin, right? Let's just say, or Strike. You do have to, there is a certain amount of virtue signaling involved in a Bitcoin only company kind of thing. But on the whole, you have to get a lot of paying customers and you have to provide them a service that it costs less to provide than what you take in revenue, and you have to convince investors to part with their money individually. You can't win a vote and then everyone's money goes to you. You know, you can't just win a popularity contest. And so that seems like so much more efficient. Now, I guess the question is the DAO, as far as a fund distribution mechanism, is it always inefficient like that? Is it always like giving the government money? Or what do you think?
That's use cases for DAOs that I've seen and written governance for is for hedge funds. As number one, the number of stakeholders is usually very small. A Moloch DAO's governance model looks very close to what a fund manager's governance would look like. And so a lot of the more successful VCs in the crypto space use Moloch DAOs as their governance model, because you've got maybe like 5, maybe 10 people that are making investment decisions. They all more or less know each other. If they don't know each other face to face, they know their character and reputations online because they formed this thing together. They may represent mostly their own wealth, or maybe they have the wealth of, you know, a few thousand individuals of varying sizes, net worths, that they're trying to govern, you know, trying to grow the group. And so and generally they're investing in other blockchain projects which are tend to be governed by DAOs. And so it would be BlackRock's dream to have the entire ecosystem of investment governed by DAOs in this way. In fact, they have, we talked, there's a few clips of me talking about it on the old Merge podcast, is that they have signaled that they are, in 2024, going to be moving into the DAO investment space, pretty heavily. Which to me, is almost an unbelievable statement, because the size of the DAOs, I actually did like an ecosystem chart, like the size of the entire Ethereum DAO, total value locked is still, at its peak under 35 billion. Mm-hmm. So BlackRock moving into it even a little bit could balloon the size of the DAO ecosystem and thus everything underneath it, you know?
Yeah, and so what do you think is the difference between a DAO that efficiently distributes capital and one that does not?
So despite all the, flack that they're catching, even the Nouns DAO builder funds and the Little Nouns ecosystem, mm-hmm. are seeing a lot of, I would say, are efficiently distributing wealth. Now, to be fair, the Nouns ecosystem is like the Dogecoin of Ethereum, right? Mm. They're a fun-loving community that mostly invests in marketing stuff that props up their own brand. They fill that same role that Dogecoin does in the older crypto ecosystem, is being like the welcome wagon for a lot of new Ethereum people. Mm-hmm. But they have just putting a proposal up is not an automatic lock with Nouns DAO. Like it's actually quite a process. There's a lot of politics to it. There's a lot of stakeholders. But the type of stuff that they tend to fund has some real world impact, at least from a marketing perspective. There's a lot. You go look at their governance history. There's thousands of proposals at this point, hundreds that have been accepted, and a lot of them are very like kind of mundane. Like, hey, we're putting a booth up at ETH Denver. Here's the budget. Approve it or not. There's a guy over here that wants to create like a 3D printable version of the Nouns robot for people, and here's the expected deliverables. I mean, there's all kinds, and there's art projects they fund and stuff like that. So a lot of the stuff that they do doesn't have like directly measurable ROI. So me saying that it's a great example may not be externally testable or anything, but I think for like the mission of what they're doing and for the, you know, the treasury that they have managed over the years, both Lil Nouns and the larger Nouns original DAO, they have been pretty good custodians under the mandate that they have. There's a couple, like there's another one called Lunar DAO that I think I'm on their, I might be on one of their governing councils. I occasionally vote in something. I'm not sure if I'm a, what level my token holdership is at, but they go out, their mandate is they're funding privacy initiatives. And so they are a wide variety of generally anarchist ideologies, but all of them privacy focused. So there's some ANCAPs and some ANCOMs and some weird folks in there as well. But they've done a really good job of not only moving the needle on successful projects that they've put money into, but also making sure that the tokenomics financially reward the DAO that made the investment, the Lunar DAO, so that they, and they are a Moloch DAO based architecture. But so their treasury is a mix of other governance tokens of other DAOs that they've invested in that have been themselves custodians of projects that move the needle on the core, you know, investment ideology of Lunar DAO.
Yeah. And so it seems like one of the, from what you're saying from Lunar DAO, at least one of the secrets to their success is that they tied in compensation in whatever project they were investing in. Whereas they haven't, their treasury is an actual reflection of, a direct reflection, I guess, of the soundness of their decisions. And that kind of makes them build on successes and discard their failures and then become efficient, as opposed to they're just sort of flying blind, you know?
Right. Right. I mean, it's just like being that they are an on-chain DAO that invests in other on-chain DAOs, that you can, there's a very clear, you know, audit trail of what works and what doesn't. Another one that's doing stuff like that that came to my mind after I finished that other answer is Cult DAO, who I am not really affiliated with. I'm in a lot of their group chats. I may hold some of their tokens, but they I would say are they're definitely messaging focused for the for the most part. They put out there a lot of, they're trying to instill a lot of like cypherpunk ideology back into the community. I would say we're for a majority of their time that they've been alive have been focused on messaging, but also have, and I would say the last year, maybe year and a half, maybe year, have been focused on funding initiatives that return money to the treasury, including their own privacy, like zero knowledge proof focused Ethereum compatible layer two.
Yeah. So when we talk about DAOs and their source of funding, obviously you have like a block reward one where it goes in there and that's just what it is. And so the variability might be the token price, which is subject to so many other factors, but whether or not the DAO gets funded is, it's kind of, you know, unavoidable. The DAO gets funded, even if depending on which initiative within it does. And then you have, I guess, what one could call it like a fee-based DAO type thing, where whatever results from a venture, that's what you have to play with. And then there's the, I guess, contribution DAO, where everyone throws money in the pot and then they decide where it goes. And the only way you get more money is by more people throwing money in the pot and buying tokens and things like that. Are there any other like input models for that? Or is that kind of the three big umbrellas sort of thing?
There are some that I think the only ones that might fall outside that realm are the class called Social Impact DAOs that I mentioned at the top, class of DAOs, where, I mean, they are still financially focused, but they are not pointed. They're like the nonprofit of the DAO world, right? They're not pointed towards financial results necessarily, although they can be. They are more pointed towards achieving a goal. I think that makes DAO tooling as a class of tooling unique and more in line with the original idea of a corporation. Corporations, when they were originally considered as like financial constructs, were not meant to have immortality the way they are today, right? Like they were conceived of as like a way to have joint ventures that would naturally have an end date. And I would say a lot of the social impact DAOs, one of the common characteristics of all social impact DAOs is there is usually a clearly defined goal that if it's achieved, like there's no reason for the DAO to exist anymore. And built into its constitution or of sorts is its own demise, right? So Free Ross DAO no longer needs to exist if Ross is free. Ukraine DAO needs to exist if Russia's not invading them anymore, right? They don't, because they do, you know, get refugees out and keep people from dying. Well, if no one's attacking Ukraine, they don't need it. You know, Iran DAO exists to support the nascent revolutionary movement to overturn the current government of Iran. If the government's overturned, you don't need Iran DAO anymore. So social impact focused DAOs are unique. I would say fall outside that category. They still have measurable results, but they may not be financial in nature.
Yeah. So they still have measurable results, and their income is still based on those results, because you still have to get more people to donate as time goes on. So there is still that connection. I guess that sort of narrows down in this like thought experiment. The model that doesn't seem to work super well is any guaranteed funding DAO model, where you don't have that relationship with having to make a party happy in order to get funding. Whereas with a donation DAO, for example, or investment DAO, you have to tell people, please give me money, buy the tokens, get in on this stuff. And when you have like an investment DAO or something like that, or you have like something that deals with like ROI, you do have to then invest in things that then bring money back in to do it. Either way, you have to make a smart decision in order to bring in more capital of some sort. And so,
I was going to say that's why I think the nouns DAO concept is an improvement over the guaranteed funding model that exists within like core chain models, where they're funded by a portion of gas fees. I would call it the DevCoin model, because DevCoin was like the chain that kind of pioneered this idea of having public good funding made possible by the chain itself. The reason why it's better is it still allows this idea of perpetually replenishing treasury, but the replenishment of that treasury is kind of tied to the success or failure of the mission. Right. So if you start a nouns DAO, let's say, to pay for homeless shelters in Dallas, Texas, right? Which is a noble goal. Homeless people need a roof. Most people, especially in our kind of world, in the kind of the liberty, anarchy, libertarian focused world, like, hey, that should be a private sector function, not a government function. Then you've got this fund that exists that people can utilize, use, participate in, just buy art related to, even if they just like the art and kind of want to support the cause. You have this perpetually replenishing fund that could pay for a homeless shelter or a series of homeless shelters, whatever. And if those homeless shelters or the fund at some level stops being effective at its goal, people can withdraw their support in a variety of ways, either not further purchasing you know, NFTs or art that will support the fund, or through, you know, governance of like, hey, let's wind this thing down for whatever reason. It's not working anymore, or let's change tactics. There's a variety of mechanisms in place in that Nouns DAO that fixes mm-hmm. the, I guess what we could call for the purpose of this conversation, the Dash DAO problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. One thing I've noticed is the option to fail is always has to be on the table in order for there to be an option to succeed. And I've actually kind of, there's something that's worse than what I would call the Dash DAO problem, which is the eCash no DAO problem, where I get a bunch of eCash people who like me are going to be all upset at this, but I don't care. Where basically the Bitcoin ABC, the team behind eCash, has a hardwired percentage of the block reward that goes to them. And there's some nuance to that where suppose, you know, each miner can choose which team or what address that their portion goes to or whatever. But there is one dev team on the chain and they get 8%, and they just implemented a code change to up that to like 32% and just start, you know. And it seems to be pretty unanimous as far as like everyone's just like, yeah, well, let them do it because there's no clear governance anyway. There is always an option of failure in that thing, but it's the failure is if someone doesn't want to give you money anymore, their only option then is to exit the ecosystem and go to a different right. coin. And so I think that that's what we found out is the when you fail, you learn lessons and you do things to succeed. I guess the situation of the guaranteed funding model of any DAO or lack of DAO, I guess, or something that doesn't make decisions like the eCash situation, is you have the guaranteed funding. You still have the opportunity to fail, but failure does not get signaled to you. You can still win votes and still win the guaranteed funding, but then the people who provide value to that funding, not the funding, but the value to that funding, exit to different ecosystems if things don't go well. So you suffer the consequences of failure, but don't get the lesson of being told no to a specific thing. And that seems to be kind of what is the big the big kind of issue. Now, even in all these situations, and I guess this might even go to beyond the DAO to like corporate or anything collective like that. Obviously the most efficient system in the world, in the free market world, is the single owner operator entrepreneurial type thing, where you have one person who does whatever the hell they want, and then they just win or lose. And then the more lose, the more you get closer to winning. And then the ones that win do really well. And obviously that's like the gold standard. Unfortunately, at scale, that doesn't necessarily work. At scale, you kind of need to have a board. You kind of need to have other people involved, et cetera, et cetera. It just doesn't scale infinitely. Now, I guess, so that gets to the question of DAOs being collective decision making. Where if I, it's kind of like national presidential votes or something like that. It's a collective decision making. So if you do a terrible idea, if enough other terrible people do the same thing, you don't suffer the consequences of the decision. Everyone does. Your losses are socialized across the entire DAO. And the same thing goes for the good decision. So it decreases that sensitivity to the sting of doing something stupid and the benefit of doing something smart. So first off, is that an avoidable problem at all, or is that just always with us?
Well, that's what the rage quit mode on Moloch DAOs is meant to prevent.
Right? Yeah.
And that's something that's lacking in the Nouns DAO concept, and something that is the solution's too primitive to account for in M of N mm-hmm. style government. But the rage quit mode, where you've got the threshold of like reversion, mm-hmm. and just, well, there's an immediate consequence to a proposal that has enough momentum to pass for whatever reason, but still negatively socializes too much loss to treasury token holders. That rage quit is an escape valve and a, like an immediate feedback mechanism to the now there's a there's this is an interesting problem that comes up that's a caveat to this being the solution to that problem. And it's the same problem that's endemic to meat space governance, which we call voting a democracy, and that is voter apathy. You cannot there, and this is the one problem that I have seen endemic to all levels of politics, corporate governance, DAO governance, community governance at every level, is getting past voter apathy. There is a very clear like chart that you can the excitement is high at the beginning, and then it at bathtubs, you know, down bottoms out in kind of the boring part of a life of a DAO, and then towards when the DAO is about to die, excitement gets real high again. So you see this little bathtub graph of what it looks like. Because most people find reading governance proposals sleep inducing, insomnia defeating, and I'm no different. If I didn't write it, I don't want to read it. It's usually not written like you know, Chronicles of Narnia or George R. R. Martin or anything like that. It's boring stuff. But it's and then layer on top of that in the world of DAOs, like I've never read cover to cover a congressional bill in my life. Maybe one or two in my entire life.
Yeah. I've lived under plenty of local legislator ones, never a national congressional one.
Right. And then layer on top of that, the difficulty that exists in either understanding the rules or participating in exercising those rules with these really new technologies of DAOs. Like the whole masternode voting and signaling system, or like I've talked to people that have been in Bitcoin for, you know, 3-4 years that don't understand how to signal intent in the Bitcoin ecosystem. Like what would you even do? Right? Like, I mean, I know what the answers are, and it involves getting very involved in certain ecosystems or owning lots of equipment. But like,
yeah, Twitter following,
most people don't even know the answer to that, right?
Yeah.
So, voter apathy is a huge deal in all levels of what we're talking about.
Yeah, one thing that I find is not, it's not really that much of a problem is consumer apathy. The end customer is constantly making decisions because they have to, and they get something from it. And the
not a problem with Bitcoin or DAT, but look at how DAOs work. DAOs thrive. Most DAO organizations thrive on the consumerization of on-chain activity. NounsDAO, in particular, perhaps the worst offender, if you want to call it that, because your governance mechanism is a piece of art that has been commodified within the ecosystem. But even with like these small DAOs that I've worked with, they're virtually indistinguishable in many cases from meme coins, because by design, right? Because they're trying to offer DAOification to meme coin holders as a benefit to you know, holding and investing in the token. And we know that investing in meme coins is a form of entertainment for a large swath of the ecosystem. And so what ends up happening is that either you become too attached to the strict rules of the governance, and a bunch of people who bought your token don't even know how to vote or what voting even means, and if you're like a Moloch DAO, your entire organization becomes calcified because you have a bunch of uneducated voters that can't exercise their power, or you have a loose M of N based, snapshot based DAO where you have the same issue of people don't know how to use it, but at least the founders are able to act unilaterally without voter consent if things become too calcified. But then again, you've just,
that's not
by
a DAO,
doing
then.
So, you the fact that you're a DAO.
Yeah, I mean, the voter apathy thing, The thing is, it becomes a thing of like, when does that become a problem, or is it a problem kind of thing? Well, so for example, in like the Dash example, you need a net 10% of the network to vote. So if it's 5,000 nodes, you need 500 yes and zero no votes. And if you have very few people voting, if you have a high apathy, then just the threshold for getting anything through, even if it's very popular, becomes a problem. So at that point, that becomes a problem of like getting a vote through. Like, but as far as actual, like if there's like three people who want to run the whole DAO because everyone else is too lazy, as long as those three people, those the rest of them are okay with the those three people making their decisions for them, is that really a problem per se?
The problem comes in depending on I think it's not a problem in that it's a problem in that it's unrepresentative. I think it becomes a problem depending on if you've made some architecture decisions that assume you've got you're going to have high engagement and you don't. Right. So if you choose a Moloch DAO, I'll name some names. So I was involved in the wind down of the FreeRoS DAO. I won't get too much into the internal political drama of as to why that happened, but some folks from Pleaser DAO, which were the largest individual token holders of FreeRoS DAO, were involved in the implementation of the Moloch DAO that is now responsible for the return of the treasury funds to the original token holders. They screwed up in the Moloch DAO by, because when it was in test mode, there was a 15-minute voting period so they could write the proposals quickly that did all the proper configuration. And then the last proposal written should have been setting it to a sane voting period, like 2 days or something like that, or a day or whatever, or a week. And they never changed it before they distributed all the governance tokens to the proper governance tokens holders. And now you've got 11 governance token holders that have 15 minutes to write and vote on any governance proposal. And these are people that don't have a common Telegram chat to exist in. There's no forum for them to coordinate on. I don't even know who all these people are. They're just Ethereum addresses. So there's no way to even reach out to them and say, hey, we need to fix this gaping flaw in our governance DAO in case we ever want to sell some of the art and distribute the funds to the token holders. It cannot. It simply cannot be done. So you've got high apathy and some other barriers to entry that prevent that. So now you've got what is essentially $11 million worth of art that Ross created, locked up in this DAO that can never be sold. It can never be moved on chain, ever, because you can't get the stakeholders, A, in a chat room together, and B, you can't get them to, there's no way you're going to get 11 people who don't know each other to agree on anything based on how contentious all those meetings ever were.
Yeah, so, of course.
Saying like there are definite flaws that can be avoided. It's like I always say when I'm talking about any type of technology decision, it's horses for courses. You got to pick the right tooling for the right group. And Moloch DAO is the right tooling, but the way it's configured is definitely wrong. And now we've locked away in that DAO $6 to $11 million worth of value.
Yeah, things can go horribly wrong. And I think that's probably a big reason why a lot of the world is hesitant to jump into the crypto world entirely like we have, because some things could go very wrong in ways that I guess have not historically gone wrong in the legacy system because of all the silver linings of all the clouds that we're trying to avoid by avoiding those legacy systems. Right. So we were talking about, like, it seems like scope and complexity start to cause issues. Would you agree with the basic notion that the DAO governs best, which governs least?
I would say that's generally true. Not universally, but generally. Like sometimes governance for the sake of governance can be fun and instructive and purposeful. Mm-hmm. The nouns DAO is like the thing that springs to mind when I say that. But yeah. There's a lot of I would say entry point DAOs that are very prolific on governance that are still effective. But in general, the DAOs that are the most effective have the least amount of governance or they've got wide carve outs, right? So there's a carve out thing that exists in Moloch DAOs. We did it manually at FreeRoS DAO, and Ukraine DAO has very large carve outs in their budget. What I mean by a carve out is areas of autonomy where the DAO, whatever that means, token holders or stakeholders or whatever, the DAO trusts an operations team to act according to, you know, their mandate without micromanagement. And so you can have a very, very active DAO from a governance perspective that's effective as long as you've got carve-outs that allow the team to do what they need to do without being, I mean, still they need to check in occasionally, like quarterly or monthly or something, but like don't need to be like, I need to send out a tweet, let's have a vote, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that can kind of get a little complicated. What are you most interested in or excited about in the future of DAOs? Is there anything coming up on the horizon, like a new tech, a new implementation, a new tooling somewhere for something that just think is going to really change some things?
So, and I forget the ERC for this proposal, but there is an Ethereum ERC or EIP out there that allows you to manage a, you know, public private key wallet without having to understand a public private key. It's a browser based implementation. So you can basically click a button, it generates it in the browser, and you can save the file off to like a USB key and put it in your closet in case your browser cache gets reset or whatever. But it's not strictly a piece of DAO tooling, but it is instrumental in what I think solves a huge problem in DAO tooling. Is people understand what it means to have a number represent amount of value or amount of voice in a community, right? Everyone's had Xbox points and airline miles for the last 50 years, right? Like that's not a hard concept for 6-year-olds to understand. But setting up a 12 or 24 word mnemonic and keeping it safe and then putting it in MetaMask and then going to 5 different websites to vote on things that I don't quite understand. That's a very, there's about 20 steps of knowledge that have to be taught to make all that work in somebody's head. And most people are not there for that. But combining this new idea of walletless on-chain activity with DAOs, I think is a silver bullet in terms of taking something that is a geek concept and turning it into a very practical business tool, right? I can teach an MBA easily how to manage a DAO if they don't have to understand that the word cryptography even exists in their lexicon.
Yeah. So just the basic wallet setup, making it simple and like human readable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the key, you know, the kind of the basic key kind of thing. Where would you direct people to learn more about DAOs, either your involvement in them or just what's something that you think would do people well for having to read or whatever?
I have written extensively about them on my Substack. So ask.drinkwine.substack.com. Most of that is on the free side of the paywall. There's some of that stuff that's behind it. My paywall is like, I think it's $5 a month. So just buy it for a month and then download all the articles and then don't re-up. That's fine with me. If you're looking to get involved inside of a community that will teach you about DAOs, Nouns is really good. I would go to DAO House. I think it's DAOhouse.party or something like that. It might have to just Google DAOhouse. It is a no-code, no-lock DAO implementation. And for, you know, $50 in gas fees or $0 in gas fees if you want to do it on testnet, you can create your own DAO and play with those levers and dials and start to understand where the weaknesses and the strengths are in that. There's a lot, and Nouns DAO has a no-code builder as well, although it's somewhat more involved to build one to play around with because you've got to do the art well. But theirs is called Nouns DAO Builder. And you can, you know, again, for $50, $100 in fees, you can build your own DAOs and start to play around with it and see, you know, where the weaknesses and the strengths are. There is a slow or a small but growing contingent of the ETH Denver event that's that's where all like the DAO thinky stuff seems to be happening. I would look into one of the Ethereum co-founder. His name is Amin Sol, I think. He is for investing in Ethereum, the Moloch DAO builder software, and Spank Chain. Those are his kind of big name claims to fame.
I know the guy. We spoke at ETH DAM together.
Yeah, brilliant dude. I love him.
Yeah.
And so he's a wealth of knowledge, and as well as contribution to the DAO communities that exist around the world.
Yeah, well, fantastic. Yeah, thanks very much for chatting. This will hopefully be enlightening to a lot of people that are kind of like flailing around in the dark on the subject.
Yeah, and I'd love to, you know, dig deeper if there's some demand for it in your audience. I mean, we could talk about how to implement it for different things. I mean, there's all sorts of different ways to take these tools and implement them for a variety of different organizations. It's kind of people think of DAOs as like a monolithic technology stack, but it's really kind of a spectrum of tools that can be applied in a variety.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to seeing a lot more in kind of meets-based kind of implementations where, you know, in your neighborhood, whatever society, that'd be fun. But yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, thanks a bunch for chatting.
And no problem.